karma, tantra, upaveda, nayai, saha, dharmasya, padash, chatvaras, tatai vashrama, vritaya, Chatur hotram karma tantram Upaveda nayai saha Dharmasya padas chatvaras Tatai vashrama vritaya Chatur hotram karma tantram Upaveda nayai saha Dharmasya padas chatvaras Tatai vashrama viritaya Chatur hotram karma tantram Upaveda nayai saha Dharmasya padas chatvaras Tatai vashrama vritaya Chatu
Four.
Hotram Paraphernalia for sacrifice
Karma
Action Tantram, expansions of such activities. Upaveda, supplementary to the Vedas. Nayai,
by logical conclusion.
Saha,
along with.
Dharmasya,
of religiosity.
Hada,
principles.
Chatvara,
four.
Tata eva,
in the same way.
Ashrama,
social orders.
Vritaya,
occupation.
Translation. The four kinds of paraphernalia for conducting the fire sacrifice became manifest. The performer, or the chanter, the offerer, the fire, and the action performed in terms of the supplementary Vedas. Also, the four principles of religiosity, truth, austerity, mercy, and cleanliness, and the duties in the four social orders, all became manifest. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Eating, sleeping, defending, and mating are the four principles of material bodily demands, which are common to both the animals and human society. To distinguish human society from the animals, there is the performance of religious activities in terms of the social statuses and orders of life. They are all clearly mentioned in the Vedic literatures and were manifested by Brahma when the four Vedas were generated from his four mouths. Thus, the duties of humankind, in terms of the statuses and social orders, were established to be observed by the civilized man. Those who traditionally follow these principles are called Aryans, or progressive human beings. Translation: the four kinds of paraphernalia for conducting the fire sacrifice became manifest. The performer, or the chanter, the offerer, the fire, and the action performed in terms of the supplementary Vedas. Also, the four principles of religiosity, truth, austerity, mercy, and cleanliness, and the duties in the four social orders, all became manifest. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutane Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Anchakaptarubhyascha kripasindubhya evacha paritampavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is discussing, this chapter in fact is discussing the gradual process of creation of this material universe which we're living in, stage by stage, in great detail, how one thing leads to another in the creation, naturally, as we were hearing yesterday, from sound vibration, everything is manifesting. Sound vibration, within sound vibration is the subtle form, or the subtle forms of everything, basically. So everything is being generated step by step, one after the other, in a type of a sequence, and there's certainly an intelligent idea behind this, and an intelligent goal to be achieved by having manifested all these various elements or features of material existence. So this particular verse is discussing one of the most important features of the creation. Very, very vital part. Actually, that part of the creation which allows the human beings within the material world to elevate themselves, without which they wouldn't be able to elevate themselves. Actually, they would simply remain on the level of animals, perhaps a little more sophisticated, but actually their activities would be simply the same activities as performed by the animals. Eating, sleeping, defending and mating. These are the fundamental activities of the animals. And human society is also prone to become entangled in these four activities very easily. Very, very easily. But if the members, or at least those members of human society, were a little intelligent, with this intelligence that they have, they'll be able to understand that I shouldn't simply live like an animal, but rather I should try for something higher. So the particular part of the creation being discussed here is that higher element, which is the facility for the human beings to elevate themselves and avoid being simply dragged down to the levels of sophisticated animals. So different parts of the material creation are being described here, but they're related to each other. First of all, the four different items or particular paraphernalias which are used in sacrifice, or which must be there in order for sacrifice to be there. The performer, obviously, if one is to have a sacrifice, there has to be someone to perform it. Or the chanter, gives that also as an alternative. The performer or the chanter of the particular mantras in sacrifice. The offerer, the person who's actually responsible or sponsoring the sacrifice, who's providing those things which are to be utilized and offered in the sacrifice. Then the fire, there has to be sacrificial fire. And the activity itself, with all its supplementary activities, the actual procedure, with all these sub-procedures, ancillary procedures, and so on, which are the actual, the different functions and different stages in the performance itself of the sacrifice. So these were all manifested from Lord Brahma. Very important things. Then, the four basic principles of religion, they also became manifest. Truth, austerity, mercy and cleanliness. In order for a person to be elevated, they have to adopt these activities. Then they can become elevated. And then the different duties of the different members of society. Duties given in terms of natural tendencies to work in different ways. Not just duties according to some arbitrary that I think I'll do this or perhaps I'll do that, but specific duties given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by Lord Brahma, which are relevant to certain specific divisions of society, naturally relevant. So these three elements then, they're manifested from Lord Brahma, very important parts of his creation, and by the presence of these elements in human society, then at least those human beings who are progressive, Prabhupada uses the term Aryan, the Aryans, those who understand the progressive values of life, they'll have the opportunity to advance. Otherwise the opportunity wouldn't be there. So this is the part of the arrangement of Brahma. And ultimately we understand, in fact Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, that this is actually coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And these are some of the most fundamental foundation principles for existence here within this material world of the human species. In Bhagavad Gita Lord Krishna explains, Saha Yajna Praja Shishva Puravacha Prajapati Anena Prasavishyadvam Eshavost Vishta Kamadhuk, that in the beginning of creation the Lord of all creatures, in other words Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so in the beginning of creation Lord Vishnu he manifested generations of men and demigods, all living entities, but particularly the men and demigods, were manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with sacrifices for Vishnu. And then the Lord blessed those men and demigods, particularly. Not the animals, at least not in this regard, but he blessed the men and demigods, that you be happy by the performance of sacrifice. And in this way, you'll be provided with all the different necessities of life. So you'll be able to live happily, and you'll be able to advance. So this is the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Specific arrangement, and of course it's carried out by Lord Brahma. He actually puts it into effect. But actually it's coming from the Supreme Lord, and is practically at least one of the most fundamental considerations in material existence, one of the most fundamental features of life within the material world. Sacrifice. That one must perform sacrifice if one is actually to elevate oneself. If one doesn't, one becomes degraded, unavoidably degraded. Lord Krishna explains also, just right around the same place in Bhagavad Gita, Yajyartat karma nonyatra lokoyam karma bandana tadartam karma kontaya mukta sangha samachara, that work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work will simply bind one to this material world. Therefore, O Arjuna, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction. In that way you will always remain unattached and free from bondage. So this is the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the elevation of the conditioned souls, at least those in the human species. Those in the animal species, of course, this doesn't really apply to them. There's also an arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for their gradual elevation. But it's not exactly this sacrifice. It's not that. Simply some natural process of elevation, species by species after species. And gradually they receive their karma acquired in previous human births. As it becomes burnt away, they're slowly elevated. And when it comes to the point, when they come to the point that their karma is to a large extent burnt away, removed, then they come to the human species again. And in the human species, that gradual process of elevation does not apply, but this principle applies, that one has to work in certain ways. And according to how one works, one gets certain results. But actually the right way to work is in the mood of sacrifice. Then one becomes elevated. So, human society in which there is not sacrifice performed for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, strictly speaking, that is not considered to be human society. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, these are the natural activities of the animals. Natural activities for the animals. And such activities, they can be performed by the human beings. But the human being is not meant to become absorbed in these activities as the animals do. If we watch an animal for a little while, then we'll see that the animal's activities are simply revolving around some eating, then some sleeping, then some mating, then some defending. Simply one of these activities after another, again and again. Just repeating these four types of activities. But human society is not meant to act like that. If human beings act like that, then Srimad Bhagavatam refers to them as Purusha Pashu, man-animal. Man-animal. That they have human body, so they can be considered man or human beings. But their standard of activity is animalistic. Therefore they're considered man-animals. Purusha Pashu. Animals, just two-legged animals or sophisticated animals. And we notice, if we observe the standard of activities of the human beings, how they're performing their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, we'll see that with their extra intelligence, they're much greater intelligence than the animals. And part of this whole concept of human beings performing sacrifice and elevating themselves, improving their standard of living, improving the quality of their characters, part of that very essential part is that this is all going on the basis of intelligence, that they understand that they must elevate themselves. They understand they should avoid certain activities. They understand how to elevate themselves. This all requires intelligence. So the human beings are different in this way. But we see that when the human beings engage in animalistic activities, with their intelligence, using this intelligence which is intended for helping to realize God, but when they use it, misuse it for improving their sense gratification, then they become terribly degraded. We may call them Purusha Pashu, man animal, but when they really become absorbed in sense gratification, using their intelligence to improve and increase and diversify their sense gratification, actually they end up becoming worse than the animals. So in that sense, Purusha Pashu may be a complimentary term. Generally people would think this is an insult. How dare we tell them that they are man-animal? They're not really proper humans. They would think this is very sort of denigrating, belittling type of language to use.
that if we observe, we'll see. Quite easily one can see that when they use their intelligence to increase their sense gratification more and more, they actually become more degraded than the animals. Just like in the field of mating. Human beings, of course, are very fond of that, and so are the animals. They see this activity as being very important and a vital part of their program in life. But when the human beings become absorbed in it and use their intelligence to increase it and diversify and so on and so forth, then they become so degraded that the mother will kill her own child within the womb. Hardly one finds an animal who will do that. Hardly. There may be some few species of life, they may do that sometimes. But generally we see that the mother with her offspring, the animal mother with her offspring, she's very protective, very concerned. But the human beings, they'll consider, shall I kill the child or not? And they may kill in so many cases. When I was in Russia recently, I was told that, at least in communist times, the practice was, of course, they wanted to keep the mothers working as much as possible, producing. So, for the mother to give birth to children, that wasn't really so good. Of course, a few children were needed to keep things going on, keep the next generation coming and developing, but too many becomes burdensome and she can't work. So, we were told that the average was in communist times that every woman would have an average of 7 abortions in her lifetime. That was the normal. That was the statistic. So just see. The animals, they won't really do that. It's not common. At least most of the species, they won't do that. They'll do quite the opposite. They'll be very concerned that their children live. But not the human. Not so much. Why? Because it may interfere with my sense gratification. I may not be able to enjoy so much. It'll take up so much time, cost so much money, use up so much energy, and so on. And with that time, money, and energy, I could be doing other things for my enjoyment. So this is how they're thinking. Or eating, the human beings. Of course, they eat such a wide variety of foodstuffs, and even things which are not foodstuffs, but they just adopt as such, and they keep entire species in captivity, raising them in certain ways simply so they'll be suitable to be eaten, simply keeping them in captivity and bringing them up under most unpleasant conditions, then slaughtering them all. So abusing other species such a wanton way, and then if they get too much of some type of food, just dump it in the middle of the sea and don't worry about the starving people. So just see, in this matter of eating, with the use, with the help of their intelligence, they've become so degraded. Is a new feature. This used not to happen. But that doesn't mean our building is slowly falling to pieces. Anyway, so eating, using the intelligence to exploit in a very, very indulgent way, such a wasteful way. As we know, for every kilo of meat, it takes something like 15 to 20 kilos of grains. So what animal will make such an arrangement? No animal. If they're not hungry, they won't. Even if they're carnivorous, if they're not hungry, they won't kill. But the human beings, they'll just kill and kill And if there's too much, they'll just throw it away. So, just see, it's very bad. And defending, the animal needs to defend sometimes. Generally we see the animals, unless of course they're carnivorous and they're hungry, but otherwise they don't just go around attacking living entities. But the human beings, they're so expert at defending with their atomic bombs, chemical weapons, and so on and so forth. They don't just choose one living being. They may choose a whole nation. And not just the humans, but everyone. Everyone. All the other species of life, they all get wiped out. And they don't care. And what else? Sleeping. Sleeping. The animals just lie down on the ground and sleep. But the human beings need their big bed. Perhaps water bed. Or futon. Or whatever it may be. Electric blankets. And duvets. And nice color scheme. Just to sleep. As Prabhupada said, that when you're asleep, then you don't know whether you're, what sort of bed you're lying on, or what sort of blankets are over the top of you, or what your color scheme is, or which suburb you're in. You don't know, because you're asleep. But the human beings, of course, they must sleep in the most grandiose and kind of spectacular ways. And of course they must also, because of their way of life, they get into anxiety a lot, so they sometimes need sleeping pills. One pill to put you asleep, another pill to wake you up, another pill to activate you for work, another pill to slow you down, and like that, another pill to digest your food, another pill to stop you over-digesting. And so this all takes intelligence. It all takes intelligence. The animals can't do it and don't do it, but generally I don't think they get so much. You don't see neurotic animals so much, or starving animals, or insomniac animals, or like that. So, eat, sleep, mate, and defend. If we observe human society, we see that that is essentially what is going on. And even if they have their intelligence. So they have their culture, art. You don't see the animals gathering together for art exhibitions, or concerts, or anything like that. So human society has culture. But what is that culture revolving around so much? Sex life, violence, and so on. Anxiety. Isn't it? They write books all about, what are the most famous books about? Generally about how someone love someone, and then someone else decides they love them also, and then there's some big crisis and clash of interests, and some disaster comes out of it all, or something like that. And so they're simply imposing the eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in their culture. The animals don't have culture. And then religion, then generally we see that religion means some way for me to get my eating, sleeping, and mating and defending together, but in a little more pious way. Oh God, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, and so on. So, just a pious way of improving one's eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and avoiding any of the consequences which may come if one has made some mistakes in one's eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Generally, this is what religion means for the average person. But Krishna consciousness is something different. The arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is really something different. Life is intended for God realization, designed for such. It's not designed
for increasing your eating, sleeping, and mating and defending unlimitedly, and to have to increase your enjoyment materially in those ways. It's not. Human body is not intended for that. It's not designed for that. And if you try to do that, then you find that this human body has limitations. People try to eat all different things. More human society is very, very disturbed. Why? Because people are so absorbed in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and trying to increase those things in unnatural ways. So the human body is not designed for that. And if one tries to do like that, then one sees, actually, my body can't do like that. Human body is designed for self-realization. But of course, if one decides that I'm not going to use it for self-realization, I'll use it for sense gratification, then this body is not suited. So therefore, in the process of reincarnation, we know that if someone becomes particularly attached to a certain type of sense gratification, generally the human body is not so good for that type of sense gratification. But there's some animal body which is better. It may be even designed for that type of sense gratification. So if that's what they want, then in their next life they're given it. Like some of us in our earlier days were involved in swimming in the sea a lot, surfing and so on. So if one feels that I must do this, every spare moment I must be in the sea and splashing around and enjoying. This human body is not very good for it. You can only stay in the water so long. An hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and you get cold. You can only go under the water for a minute or two at the very most. Then you can't hold your breath any longer, it becomes too much. And if the water's too cold, you can't go in. And if the waves are too big, it's dangerous. So, human body isn't suited, really. But if this is what you want to do, this is your business in life, to be in the sea, then you don't need a human body. You don't want a human body. Human body is really an impediment to that desire. But there are certainly suitable bodies, if that is what you'd like. So by the mercy of Krishna, you can get such a body. You can become a fish, and you'll be very happy. You'll be, as they say, you'll be in your element, in the water. So this is the arrangement of the Lord. This is the kindness of the Lord. That if you really want to do that, then don't have a human body in which you can't fulfill this desire very much. You become frustrated trying to fulfill that desire. You don't need a human body. You don't want it. It's an impediment. Get a fish's body. And in terms of all these activities, eat, sleep, mate, defend, and so on and so forth, there are always bodies which are better than the human body. If you must eat meat, human body is not very good. But you can get a carnivorous animal's body, and you don't have to worry about getting cancer of the colon, or getting indigestion, or having to pay a lot of money to buy it, or, you know, whatever else may be involved. Heart attack. You don't have to worry about checking your cholesterol level. This is all part of the mechanism. These things are all taken care of by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. So we never hear of a lion or tiger having a heart attack. Or something of that sort. You never hear of it, because it doesn't happen, because their bodies are designed to do like that. So if you feel you must do like that, then to have a human body is an impediment. The doctor will tell you can't eat You have to cut down on your meat intake and you'll feel pain. You'll feel very much inconvenienced that you can't do what you want to do. So this human body is not intended for these things. It's not made for these things. And an intelligent person will realize that. Just like anything, like this microphone. It has a use. It's built with a certain intention behind it. And one can use it for other things if one wants. You could use it as a club or a bludgeon of some sort. Beat someone. And it would work. But actually it's not what it's intended for. So if you use it like that, in a little while, it'll be useless. Because it's not intended for that. So, just like that. Takes a little intelligence. A child will take the microphone, first thing, stick it in the mouth. He thinks, oh, something to eat. So he can try if he wants, he can suck on it and lick it and like that. But that's not what it's intended for, so it won't work. So the human body is designed for something, God realization. And if we use it for something else, it won't work. It won't work. So by the mercy of Lord Krishna, the whole process of religion is there, God realization. And Krishna consciousness is such a process, such a thing, that it specifically focuses on that. What is the real business in the human form of life? That is the nature of Krishna consciousness. As Srimad Bhagavatam says, right at the very beginning, Dharma Projita Kaita Vocha Paramonya Matsaranam Satam Vejam Vastaram Atravastu Shivadam Tapatrayam Mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamani Krite Kimva Paraya Ishvara. That this Srimad Bhagavatam begins by completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated. In other words, which are to do with eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and related issues. Srimad Bhagavatam begins from the first word by completely rejecting these things. And it expounds only the highest truth, which is understandable by those persons who are somewhat pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. And such truth uproots the threefold misery. So, it's our good fortune then, great good fortune, to have this accessible to us and available to us by the grace of the Lord, we've understood to some extent. So, as devotees, aspiring devotees, we should be concerned how to absorb myself more in these activities, as described here, sacrifice. Of course, we don't necessarily need to take this term sacrifice to mean some sort of formal ritualistic sacrifice, which appears to be what is being described here. But ultimately we understand this means the principle of sacrifice. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna, he makes those statements which we mentioned earlier about how he established sacrifice and gave it for the human beings, so they could advance and bless them like that. But then the Lord goes on to say that since time immemorial, the all-pervading transcendence actually has been eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So the principle of sacrifice is there, that in order to advance in the human form of life, we have to sacrifice. We have our bodies, we have our intelligence, we have our energy, like this, different faculties, we have our senses, different things we have at our disposal. So instead of doing what the average conditioned soul does, using one's senses, one's mind, one's intelligence, one's body, one's energy, and whatever resources, whatever other resources one has at one's disposal. Instead of using those things for personal sense gratification, the devotee uses all these things in sacrifice for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, engaging in different activities of devotional service, using the intelligence, how to serve Krishna nicely, using the senses or the body, the different organs, to carry out those nice activities for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the human form of life. This is the proper use of the human form of life. Cultivating these four principles of religiosity, truth, austerity, mercy, cleanliness, these are inherently there in the practice of Krishna consciousness. Mercy, not simply on the bodily platform, but on the real platform, spiritual platform, to help the conditioned souls get out of material existence. Truthfulness, explaining to people what is the real situation, not misleading them, trying to take advantage of them in the name of religion, so that one can advance one's own interests. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives a very interesting description of what is truthfulness. He says that, among other things, it's speech which does not hurt. One of our devotees was discussing this point a little while ago. He is saying that if you see, you happen to be walking down the road somewhere, and one cow comes running past, and then one man in a butcher's uniform with some sort of chopper or something, he comes running up to you and asks, "Did you see a cow run by?" And you know that the cow just ran by that way. Then if you say to him, "Oh yes, the cow went that way, just go run that way," then this is a type of truthfulness, because it doesn't cause pain to the living entities. Anyway, truthfulness ultimately means to establish the absolute truth. What is the real truth in life? Cleanliness, austerity, and then duties, the duties of the four social orders. As a brahmachari, one has certain duties. Brahmachari or brahmacharini, one is a student, and one is meant to be the humble servant of the spiritual master, do whatever is required, even most menial tasks. As a householder, one has somewhat different duties. As a vanaprastha, somewhat different duties again. As a sannyasi, different duties again. So different duties are there. They're naturally there, as arranged by the Supreme Lord. So one should perform those duties for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if one does like this, then one can become elevated. One will be considered Aryan, situated progressively. Otherwise, Purusha Pashu, eat, sleep, mate, and defend. If one doesn't use the human form of life for what it is intended, but if one shows that actually I'd rather do something else, something animalistic, then, of course, indirectly one is asking, "Let me have an animal body," indirectly. One may not exactly be specifically requesting, "Oh God, please give me the body of a dog. I would really like it." But indirectly one is asking. Indirectly. So, that indirect request is fulfilled by the mercy of the Lord. And then one can eat as one wants, without fear of disease or like that. One can sleep all day if one wants, without having to worry about that one's missing work and one will run out of money or something. One can just sleep all day. One can mate without having to worry about disease or overpopulation, and so on. One can do these things. One can defend without having to endanger too many other innocent living entities. This is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So devotees understand that this principle of sacrifice is the underlying principle of advancement. It's the underlying principle of advancement. That we should be thinking, what am I doing for Krishna? What am I doing? Am I doing something for Krishna? Can I do more for Krishna? What would be best for me to do for Krishna? The devotee is very concerned like this. In other words, how to perform sacrifice. Let me become more and more absorbed in sacrificing, performing activities for the pleasure of Krishna. Any comments or questions?
Prabhupada mentions in one purport in Bhagavad Gita how generally truth is something which is spoken heartily. But then he goes on to say that actually we rather present the absolute truth regardless of the
right.
So how do we know, how do we discern how to present the truth without being rude or offensive?
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't really be offensive, you know, if one is very sort of to the point and, you know, like not compromising. Then it's not truly offensive to tell someone the absolute truth, that they're not their bodies, they're actually servants of Krishna, and they're stealing from the material nature. You know, it's not offensive. A person may feel offended, but that's just because they have great misconceptions, which they're accepting as being, you know, very true. There's a very interesting conversation. Prabhupada is talking with one man in India on a morning walk. The man has a glass business, manufacturing glass. And Prabhupada asks him, oh yes, what do you do? The man says, yes, I make glass. And Prabhupada asks, where do you get the glass? How do you make it? He says, well, from silicon, from sand. So, you know, we take a lot of sand and this is like the basic raw material. Prabhupada said, oh yes, where does the sand come from? And the man said, from Bhagavan, from the Supreme Lord. And then Prabhupada told him, you're a thief. And there was just for a few brief moments a discussion about how he was a thief, stealing the sand. He doesn't pay Krishna for it, doesn't ask Krishna, he just takes it. And then he makes big profit and lives some sort of luxurious life. So Prabhupada was telling him that you're a thief, and the man was agreeing. Then the man, as soon as he got a chance, he slipped to the back of the group because it was a bit much for him. After a while, his mind settled down a bit. So he came up to the front again. He had thought of some, like a type of response. He said that, Swamiji, I acknowledge that, you know, I'm something like a thief that I do like this, but I give a lot of money in charity. And we do a lot of, you know, pujas and this and that. Prabhupada said, oh, very nice. Then you're just a little thief. You're not a big thief. So, but it's true. Now, of course, so Prabhupada would do like that sometimes, just be very forthright. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he would also do that. He would use, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would use what his disciples would sometimes call the chopping technique. Just tell a person that, look, you are just like this. Of course, the person is not aware of that at all. They probably think they're doing quite well, or at least not too bad. But then tells them, you're actually a fool, a rascal, and, you know, you're really not well situated. So it's a shock. So this was called the chopping technique. And some of his disciples objected, at least amongst themselves. They wouldn't express it to him, but they felt that, you know, this isn't so good. Some people get offended and upset and go away, you know, angry, something like that. So therefore they didn't appreciate the chopping technique. Not that he would always use it, but, you know, he would sometimes do like that. So Prabhupada said that they all fell down, all those ones who objected. They all fell down. Then having said that, Prabhupada would also, when he would preach to people, he would also consider their position and how to present Krishna consciousness to them in such a way that it would be acceptable to them, you know, rather than just sort of hitting them over the head with it or something like that. So we can also try and do like that. That's nice. To try and think, how is this particular person going to most easily be able to appreciate Krishna consciousness? So we can do like that. But sometimes, under some circumstances, the chopping technique may be appropriate. Prabhupada told the story of one of his godbrothers who went to one public program in which there was him and I think a Ramakrishna sannyasi or from some group like that, really like bogus. So that other person gave his lecture, which was all Mayavad. And then the devotee got up and used the chopping technique. He just tore to pieces everything the other person had said right in front of him. And there was some sort of, you know, disturbance as a result. So some of the devotees came back and told Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that this happened, there was a disturbance. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very pleased that he, you know, with this, in this situation, he actually established the absolute truth, despite the mundane feelings and misconceptions of the so many people. Anyway, one has to use one's intelligence. Yeah. And generally we saw that Prabhupada would deal with people very much in a way which took into consideration where they were at, what they could appreciate or couldn't appreciate, like that. And he would deal with them very nicely. And even if, in the end, he would tell them that, you know something, you're a fool and a rascal, then they would agree, yes, you're right. Even sometimes he'd tell people, in the end, that you're living, you know, living like a dog or a cat. And they would agree, yes, yes. But because he'd already presented things very nicely and they were feeling very comfortable with it, and so generally we should try and do that like that. And we have to use our intelligence to know how to do that and what to do in terms of the different people we're dealing with. Some comments or questions? It depends on what it is, but you know, if it's just some simple austerity like not eating, there's some benefit in that. Not in Krishna consciousness. Well, it would depend, but generally not in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada explains that people who are very poor, therefore they're forced to fast. They're forced. And, you know, and other austerities, they're just forced to undergo. Prabhupada explained that they make the same advancement as a yogi who's voluntarily denying himself the same things. They make the same advancement, or they get the same benefit. So if someone is fasting, you know, on a Tuesday, they may think it's such and such deity's day, which it probably isn't. But, you know, anyway, there's some benefit there. But, you know, if they do some other type of thing, if they do some foolish or some austerity which is harmful, then it may be detrimental. But if it's something like fasting or something like that, then that's nice. Then we shouldn't. Then we should just encourage them to add Krishna consciousness. But if they're doing something harmful, like their idea of sacrifice is killing animals, you know, this animal sacrifice, so it's very harmful. So then we may have to preach to them that don't do this, and it may be difficult. Some may not accept, but some will accept. So in that sort of case, then yes, we might have to stand up against it. But otherwise, if it's something sort of harmless, then you can just say, oh, very nice, you encourage them, and then try and encourage them to add Krishna consciousness. Any other comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.